Our first speaker, Dr. Stanford Carmack, has flown in for this meeting from Cape Cod, Massachusetts, where he claims to have had an actual winter with snow. Dr. Carmack earned a bachelor's degree in linguistics from Stanford University and a law degree from Stanford Law School, as well as a master's degree and a doctorate in Hispanic languages and literature from the University of California at Santa Barbara, specializing in historical syntax. He's published articles on such topics as Georgian verb morphology and object participle agreement in Old Spanish and Old Catalan. He currently focuses his research on Book of Mormon syntax as that relates to early modern English, and he's contributing by means of textual analysis to Volume 3 of Royal Skousen's Book of Mormon Critical Text Project. The moment that I realized that Stan Carmack was out there doing the particular kind of thinking and research that he's doing was one that I'll always remember. I'd already had conversations over several years with Royal Skousen about the curiously archaic linguistic features that he was seeing in the English Book of Mormon. And when Dr. Carmack submitted his first paper to Interpreter, Journal of Mormon Scripture, I was astonished and delighted to discover that somebody else, somebody with superb relevant training and credentials, was seeing analogous things. In a way, the appearance of Stan Carmack made this symposium thinkable. Dr. Carmack.
Well, thank you very much. A year ago, I don't think I would imagine myself being here, and so I don't think anyone else would either. But we don't have much time, so let's begin. The question we have before us is, what is the language of the Book of Mormon? Is it Joseph Smith's words under biblical influence? Or is it earlier English that was revealed to Joseph Smith? This is an idle question. We know that B.H. Roberts studied this question, and he was convinced that the Book of Mormon was full of errors in language, in grammar, and diction, because Joseph Smith was uneducated. And this is the prevailing view that we have today. Well, he didn't have the earliest text. Now we're very close to the dictation that Joseph Smith made to his scribes. He also didn't have digital databases. This is a picture of the first printed book in English by Caxton. He didn't have early English books online, more than 50,000 books, which we can search. I think he may have lived barely to see the publication of the Oxford English Dictionary. But we have that today, and so that's a marvelous resource. That gives us an idea of what the text might be like. Okay, early modern English, there's the time period we're looking at. 1475 is William Caxton printing in Westminster. It goes up to about the year 1700. We're going to begin with the phrase, with their might in the plural. We see that in the current LDS text in Jacob 5:72 only. The servants did go and labor with their mights is how it looks in the earliest text. In the current text, the earliest text has did go to it. That was edited out, but that was one instance of mites that the editor's eye missed. Here's do go to it from 1574, a translation of Calvin. That looks a lot like did go to it. Here's one instance in the Doctrine and Covenants where we have with all their mights. That's the one that remains there, and there were others in earlier versions. Here's how many we have in the earliest text. We have 12 of them. I've just highlighted mites in as we go through this. Look at the red in particular. We see it in the plural. That sounds strange to us, but it's there. They all have with, except for Ether 15, which has in their mites. The Bible has with all their might, always in the singular. That's what we're interested in. The fact that it's not biblical, the plural mites. Here's an example from 1606, did withstand with all their mights. Did withstand reminds us of the Book of Mormon. If we love God with all our might, 1649. And this is the last one I found in the database I used from 1665, with all their mights. Here's the usage profile in early modern English over time. We can see the usage was high around the turn of the 16th century, relatively high. It was never too much. but that it really tapers off and goes virtually to zero by the end of the early modern period. There may be some out there that I haven't spotted, but where could Joseph Smith have gotten this language? Well, perhaps he read Malory, Lamort d'Arthur. That was published in the 1810s, three different editions in London. That has nine instances of mites in it. The Book of Mormon has 12. How about Edmund Spenser's Fairy Queen, an important poem, well known in certain circles, in there are measured mites, like Ether 15. Let's consider Nor No Manner of Ites. We have four of these in the earliest texts. They've all been changed to nor any manner of. Riches, iniquity, lasciviousness, and the famous one. Here's a profile of usage. Again, very little. I found none in the 1700s that I could find. That is characteristic of the 1500s. Again, Malory has it. Nor no manner of goodness. Froissart's Chronicles, translated by Lord Berners, has nor no manner of right. Let's consider If It So Be That, with an it. We have 39 of these consistently in the Book of Mormon. In the Bible, we have 9 without it, if so be that. So it could not have been dictated under biblical influence. Here's the usage of If So Be That in Orange, the King James Bible usage, and If It So Be That, Book of Mormon, in black. You can see virtually the whole time the Book of Mormon usage is lower than the Bible's, and how it goes to zero by the 1600s, essentially. I found 3 in the 1700s, the last one in 1773 in a Dublin magazine, of If It So Be That. Well, Chaucer has it in The Squire's Tale. That was published in 1824. He could have seen it there. Here's Chaucer's use in a translation of Boethius, famous work. Moore used it in 1534 in his dialogue of Comfort Against Tribulation. Let's consider It Supposeth Me. We have 4 of these, again, in the Book of Mormon. The hard-hitting one at the end, It Supposeth Me That Thou Art a Child of Hell. Him supposeth is found one time, according to the OED, in the textual record. The same kind of syntax. The status is rare, one. One attestation in this formation. The poet is John Gower, a contemporary of Chaucer, wrote an important work of poetry, Confessio Amantis. That was published in 1810. I suppose Joseph Smith, had he read late Middle English poetry, could have seen it there. But it would have been hard to recognize because he would have needed to transform the syntax. That's how it looks in the poem, with modernized spelling. That's essentially what it means. That's a rendering I found online. The canonical word order, non-poetic, would be, but it supposeth him all too little. The chain, I suppose, the analogical chain here for Joseph Smith to get this would be methinks, methinketh, me supposeth, it supposeth me. Okay, let's consider past tense in the Book of Mormon. First Nephi 16 and going into chapter 17. We have 8 of these very close together, bookended by simple past tense, came and bear. We know bear from the earliest text. In our current LDS text, it incorrectly has did bear there. But see, we have 8 of these. They're right. Did is used to express the affirmative past tense without any emphasis, right next to the infinitive. Did speak, did chasten, etc. It looks a lot like this 1534 passage, translation by Marshall of Erasmus of Rotterdam. Here he has 9 of them. We have spake is the only simple past there. Spake evil. Again, did right next to the infinitive for the most part. It certainly was a past tense marker. When you look at the text, when anyone reads the Book of Mormon a lot, you realize it's not for emphasis in most cases. It just marks the past tense, as in this 1566 passage. Now, the Book of Mormon uses it at least 27% of the time. That's including Isaiah passages. The Bible, less than 2% of the time. So, again, it could not have been dictated under biblical influence. That's because Tyndale didn't use it a lot, in part. Pseudo-biblical writings weren't able, you know, didn't go off of Didi and analogize to heavy Did usage. Ella Gord in 1953 studied the usage. He developed a profile, and he looked at when did was right next to the infinitive. That's what we have in the Book of Mormon 91% of the time. But only 5% of the time do we have inversion, where that's the one we use today. Not only did we go in the strength of the Lord, did we go. And if you put an adverbial phrase in between there, that's another thing that Ella Gord studied, 4% of the time in the Book of Mormon. The B type there is the one that increases over time in English. Only in the 1500s do you get very low levels of that and C. And so the Book of Mormon is a good 16th century match at a deep syntactic level. Where could he have gotten this? Perhaps the most famous work that has a lot of did in it is Spencer's Fairy Queen, which I've talked about. It's about the same length as the Book of Mormon. We have a little lower percentage use, 18%. That was my estimate from just a small slice of the book. But it has more than 3,000 instances of did in it used in the way of the Book of Mormon. Book of Mormon has about 1,800. Okay, here's an example from the Fairy Queen. Like two mad mastiffs, each on other flew, and shields did cheer, and mails did rash, and helms did hew, so furiously each other did assail. That's rather reminiscent here of Alma 35. Look at the tight usage of did, like we saw in the Fairy Queen. Four in a row, very close together. Oh, sorry. And we have 2 Nephi 5. Here's the profile of usage in English over time. This is about 500 years of English. We can see how quickly it rose in the textual record. It was a brief phenomenon where it was very frequent in English. And over time, the inversion and the adverbial use, while the overall rate decreased, the inversion increased. So the patterns of usage that pseudo-biblical writings have are very different. 1830s is Joseph Smith's usage. Okay, there was a Cambridge theologian named Barrow who died in 1677. He used did a lot. In this passage, he has 22 instances. This was printed in 1818 in a collection of his works. This could have been another place where Joseph might have seen it. Okay, here's good variation we have in Alma 39:3. Thou didst forsake the ministry and did go. Notice we don't have didst go, right? We have did go. Well, I showed this to my dad about 20 years ago. I said, this is curious variation. It was never edited. And he said, well, what does that mean? And I said, well, I don't know. It's interesting, though. Now we know that it means early modern English. Thou didst rise up and did eat meat. Thou didst prove in Massa and did cause him to strive at the waters of Meriah. Thou didst take it out of my hand and did knock it many times together. Same variation you can see in the textual record. Okay, how about command syntax? King James Bible has 170 of these when you have verb command governing another verb. Here's an example from Esther. The king commanded Vashti the queen to be brought in before him. Two is used after command. The infinitive is used 81% of the time. Book of Mormon has about the same number of instances, and it uses that as in Christ commanded that their little children should be brought. Notice that we have the same embedded verb there, brought, be brought, but that is used about 80% of the time. Again, this could not have been dictated under biblical influence. And Joseph Smith's language would have been even more favoring the infinitive. Hardly any that usage in Joseph Smith's own language. We're going to compare two verses And one's in Alma 52, one's in Alma 56. They end the same way, maintain those cities which they had taken. One has an active voice command verb. The second one has passive voice. We get that with the active voice verb. He did command that. And we get two with the passive voice. You cannot recover this from the Bible, but it is an early modern English pattern. And there are several patterns that are in accordance with early modern English in the text, in arcane instances in the Book of Mormon. Here's the first printed book in English that I showed you briefly before, printed by Caxton, actually not in England, in Bruges, Belgium, in 1473 or 74. The Recueil of the Histories of Troy has 42 instances of command syntax. That's why it's interesting to us. The Golden Legend, Caxton's Golden Legend, he printed that 10 years later. 380 instances that I counted. I correlated 8 different rates in these books with the Book of Mormon, with the Bible. Book of Mormon correlates with Caxton's Troy at 98%. Caxton's two books correlate with each other at 90%. Book of Mormon with the Golden Legend at 88%. And the Bible, well, it's negatively correlated with all these, minus 13% with Caxton's Golden Legend, a little worse with Caxton's Troy, and a little worse with the Book of Mormon. Now, these Caxton books, they're translated, it's translated English, Caxton did, out of Latin and French. It's atypical of command syntax in the textual record. These are the best matches I have found, and I've looked quite extensively. So, there we have an unexpected match with that syntax. How about causative syntax? We have 250 in the Book of Mormon, 300 in the Bible. Bible does not use that very much. It uses it 1% of the time. All evidence shows that Joseph Smith would have used it maybe never in his own language. We have causing them that they should, a curious doubling of the pronoun there. We can find that in the textual record in early modern English. Cause them that they might. Here's some more doubling to causes that we should, which causes that we could not. He will cause it that it shall. He first caused it that it should. Again, that strange doubling. This phrase, I found something similar to this one in Fabian's Chronicle. This is a rare phrase. There are very few of these to be found in the textual record, but it's very similar to the Book of Mormon. Cause the Germanies that they should, did cause the Lamanites that they should. So here are possible sources summarized of that Joseph Smith could have used. Mallory, Spencer, Lord Berners, Geoffrey Chaucer, Thomas More, John Gower, Isaac Barrow, William Caxton, and the last one, Robert Fabian. Okay, if we think of early modern English, we will find that it really elucidates the language of the earliest text of the Book of Mormon. And we're going to see things here that we didn't know were in the text. Notice, this is not Joseph Smith plagiarizing Shakespeare. It's because in early modern English, a Jew was used a lot. Shakespeare has it over 100 times. In one database I looked at, I found it about 2,000 times. It was a frequent word. This is one Royal Skousen pointed out 10 years ago, how it's like Jonathan Swift. This is not Joseph Smith plagiarizing a political poem written by Jonathan Swift in 1731. It's the Lord appropriating language rightfully that he saw fit to appropriate. And then the famous one, again, this is not plagiarism by Joseph Smith. This is the Lord using the language that he felt was appropriate to the text. Okay, how about this bad syntax? Could have went forth and partaken. We've always thought this was American English, and it could be. It could also be British modern English, but it could be early modern English. It was in the 1600s used quite a bit. Should have went, would have went, even had went there. How about had ought, used instead of ought? We've thought that this was, again, American English. Here's some examples, one from Nathaniel Hawthorne. Had ought instead of ought. But had ought in the early modern period was a strong form of should or ought. Every soul should be subject to the powers, for if every soul had ought to be subject to Timotheus and Titus. There we have it used in a counterfactual, stronger form than should, I think, there. And again here in 1631, we have ought to have done, and then we have the stronger form following up, the will had ought to rectify. Okay. Ye had ought to have stirred yourselves more diligently, as he had ought to have done. Again, we have good correspondence there. Divine mercy had ought to have made him fearful. Now, the design of the Nephites were to support their lands. There we get strange agreement there. That looks bad, doesn't it? It should be was. This is very close to that. The design of the flanks are chiefly to scour. Look at that. Plural followed by the infinitive. And with design and a plural there. And when the gospel of glad tidings are preached. There we have, I mean, this is proximity agreement that we can see even to this day. Until the wickedness of the people were so great, that you could think of that as possibly subjunctive, but we don't need to. The sharpness of the shells were turned. The thickness of the trees were such. The likeness of bucklers were seen when the grossness of their errors were made known. Words of Alma and also words of Amulek, which was declared. Which makes was more likely? The words of Trevisa, which was this, the words of Christ, which is, omitting the words of Christ, which reprove it. This is an interesting pattern. There's a lot of this. In early modern English, you get people was 10% of the time, but people which was almost 40% of the time. Now, Book of Mormon, how does it line up? It lines up very closely. And I ran these numbers a week or two ago, and I didn't expect to see this, but it correlates at nearly 100%. So this is early modern English out of a very large database, these numbers, and this is exhaustive counts in the Book of Mormon. Here's one that's been criticized, Adam and Eve, which was our first parents. Thomas Beacon used this in 1566. Not after the manner of Adam and Eve, which was made of the ground. Adam and Eve, which was the residue of his spirit. Here's one without number resolution. King Limhi and many of his people was desirous to be baptized. Look how close this tracks, 1583. The king and all his people was so amazed with fear that they fell down as dead. Here's a curious one. Paanchi and that part of the people that were desirous they should be their governor was exceeding wroth. So we have were followed by was. We expect were here. The city and all those that were in it was not destroyed and slain. It's as if the writer wanted to switch to the singular to kind of distinguish it there, and I found other examples like that. There have been many prophets that have testified these things. We don't get there have been. There have been popes which have been poisoners, written by John Bale. There have been many that have slandered you in the gospel of our Savior Jesus Christ. He had somewhat contentions. This has been criticized. It's been edited to of contentions. But somewhat here is modifying the verb have. When they have somewhat rolls and tumbles in their thoughts. He had somewhat the advantage. She had somewhat the tone of her voice whom he hunted for. This one goes into modern English. But again, it's the somewhat acting as an adverb here, qualifying the verb, not the noun there. Contentions. Here we have some ugly language. And it came to pass that they'd done all these things according to the command of the king Heth. Done is used 8 times instead of did or had done in the earliest text. But we can see it in, it's just not a 19th century usage. It goes way back. For what they'd done upon very good advisement they had done. You see how it's paired with the pluperfect there. Servant of the Lord of the vineyard, done according to the word of the Lord of the vineyard, and grafted in the branches. Here, as early as 1486, I found one. Tokening that he blessed all weddings that he done after the law of Holy Church, and praised God of his grace for that he done unto them. He considered that he done them a sufficient mischief. In recompense, therefore, the good services which he had done me, done his princess, and the good offices which he done me. Again, paired with pluperfect there.
by the reports they scattered abroad, would make the world believe that I'd done things worth the observance. So that usage goes way back. We have this he done that he might four times in the earliest text. And I found a minimal pair in 1684. I didn't find this exact one, but look how it differs only in one sound and one bit of meaning here. That's what a minimal pair is. Okay, this has been naively criticized and graven used as a verb stem. Why naively? Because we can find it, as we see here, not only in the Book of Mormon, but in all different periods of English. We can find it in the early modern period, used as a verb stem, to engraven, just like the Book of Mormon, 1650. We can find it in the 1700s and 1800s in London published books, used as a verb. We can find it in American English in the 1800s. But it's important to go over that because molten is a curious verb, and it is a verb stem, like engraven. We see it clearly here. Two molten and three instances of did molten. It's used as an infinitive there. Well, in 1425, it was used as a verb stem. All the metal moltened then and two aquarium together ran. This is how it looked in the original manuscript, the original Chronicle of Scotland. I have searched high and low for this, and I have found it as early as 1838 in a London published book. Those nobles moltened, and then this one from 1849, moltened lead. Yea, even to that they did forget. So that was Northern early modern English. This one is also. Even to that, their Royal Skousen pointed out 10 years ago that that means until. And indeed, the OED has that. We shall hasten before to that we come to that city. And to that I be into fashion, I am ashamed to presume. He said a tower should stand to that time that a virgin should bear a son. So that means even until they did forget. Thou remembereth, this has been criticized, but it's a strange error that Joseph Smith would have known. Everyone knows you say thou rememberest. And the printer's manuscript has thou fastest. But we can see this in the 1500s. Thou knoweth. Thou pleaseth God. And notice the variation there. Thou askest and receivest. Thou asketh. Thou professest into the 1600s, thou blesseth and curseth. Look at this passage here. Eight instances with TH from 1511 with only one normal case, thou hast, in purple. Every one in red is a TH ending after thou. When my father had read and saw many great and marvelous things, when they had opened and saw him, they were astonished. When Isa had read and saw that Muhammad, when they had begun and saw it take well. Until I had gone forth with my little army and came near the city Antipera. There we expect and come. When she had gone away and came again, as the Lamanites had passed the hill Riplah and came into the valley, and as soon as they had passed the straits and came in view of one another. Okay, this one is important. Switching from ye to thou. This is, people have gotten this wrong, and we shouldn't have ever since the OED was published, way back in 1930 or thereabouts. Close usage of ye and thou for a singular address. The OED makes very clear that this was used in the early modern period. For ye thinketh thou shouldest not believe God for no man's speech. Here's the Coverdale Bible. My statute shall ye keep that thou let not the cattle gender with beasts of another kind. Close usage for a singular address. And ye can also be used as an object. We'll get into that soon. Thou goest about much, shear him to Jacob, preaching that which ye call the gospel or doctrine of Christ. If thou love much God, ye like it for to think upon him much. Close switching of thou to ye. And notice the curious inflection there after ye. We have that in the Book of Mormon too. Thou to ye, thou to ye, thou to ye. I could give you more. There we got the idea. If he confess and repenteth, we switch to the indicative, and we see that in 1489. Very good correspondence. He do so no more and repenteth. If a prophet come among you and declareth, switching to indicative, or if any man hear the word and declareth not the same by his works. If a man be meek and lowly in heart and confesses, we switch from be subjunctive to confesses indicative, and here we have it, 1694. The man commits treason or felony and confesses the same. Now, the Book of Mormon levels the past participial system quite a bit, especially with had. In other words, in the pluperfect, King had given command, for he had gave them power. Of course, the book's been criticized for that, but we must criticize Shakespeare then. Oh, had she then gave over. 1592 Shakespeare. Sleep had never gave Hermes power, etc. So in early modern English, when you add have, you would more likely use a verb like gave or smote or wrote. And you can see the same pattern, same tendency in the Book of Mormon. Book of Mormon is modern English in terms of auxiliary selection. The time has come that they have become wicked. Okay, so has and have there. In the Bible, it would use is and are. Here's is become, is come. So in this way, the Book of Mormon is rather modern in terms of its auxiliary selection. Look at have became, though, how it's used in the 1600s. It would have became. We find that in modern English, but it's early, and we find it in the 1600s. He would have became a new man. It would have better became him. Much provisions is used in the text instead of many provisions. Here we have, which did enter therein, it did sail forth, and we have in 1658, and 25 galleys were prepared and to bring away much provisions. The Lord God hath commanded that they should not do none of these things. Here we have multiple negation. Book's been criticized for that, and it's been heavily edited. The beloved person should not love none of her acquaintance. Very good correspondence there. We have not seen none of our enemies come into this country. Nor neither of their brethren, nor neither of us both contented, nor neither of both. Here's a good one. Nor they love not, nor will not, have no great lords among them. And Shakespeare has a good one. No woman has, nor never none, shall mistress be of. Multiple negation was common in the early modern period. We have good variation that corresponds only with this period. Thou hast and hast, but have, with the same subject, thou, but we switch to have. Thou hast smitten us because of our iniquity and hath driven us forth. Ether 3. The which, Christ, thou hast born in thy womb virginal and hath nourished and given him suck. Oh, thou hast spoke my wishes. There's the leveling to spoke, not spoken. That's common in Shakespeare. And hath. Thou hast and hath. We have switching to have. I have put my words in thy mouth and hath covered thee. That's a tweak of a King James Bible passage. That's curious, but it's there. And it corresponds to 1660s examples here. I have made myself a scorn and hath endangered my reputation. I have chid him for his lewd life and hath withdrawn myself from his ill company. Nephi's brethren rebelleth is not Joseph Smith overdoing it and trying to be biblical. It is 1500s usage. As for the common people that rebelleth about London, let they that rebelleth beware. Flames ascendeth, burneth, consumeth, signifieth, increaseth. It's not hard to find this ending after the subject flames. Know ye not that I have power to deliver ye up? Here we have close usage of ye as subject and object, right? Here we have it in 1573. In red we have the object, ye. I think he will not give ye your discharge so lightly, except ye bring better proofs. Okay. Again, we have it here. For this will tie ye full of knots, ye shall no more offend the queen. Close usage. And we have gathered ye up in this example, like deliver ye up. There has been disputations among you, rather than there have been. Oh, now one switch. There has been scandalous informations presented to the houses. That's political language from 1648. There was exceeding sharp lightnings, there was lightnings and voices, and if there was miracles wrought, there was also greater miracles wrought. Here is our last example. Behold, we layeth the tool here, and on the morrow it is gone. We thinketh, we that speaketh the truth freely, or ye false utterers who careth not. Look at that inflection. when we suffereth us not to be deaf to his doctrine, but we giveth it entrance into us. There's a translation of Calvin showing the inflection used with the subject we, just like in the Book of Mormon. Okay, so we have seen the tip of the iceberg here. We've had a glimpse of what you can see in the earliest text. And I've compared it with the early modern English examples we've seen. And in many of these cases, we only have correspondence from early modern English with the Book of Mormon. There are some where we can see some modern English. But many of these, we could not find this correspondence. We know Joseph Smith in his dictation, in many cases, would have dictated according to his own language or the Bible differently. We know that he really would have struggled to produce this kind of syntax and this kind of language. And so when we see a lot of the bad grammar, I think we can now embrace it and we can enjoy the variation we see there because we see that in early modern English. We know when it sounds like bad verb agreement, in almost every case, we can find more than one example in the textual record that is exactly like that. So I would say that this truly is a marvelous work. And using a bit of syntax, we should be greatly astonished. When I look at the databases and see all this language, I am greatly astonished. And occasionally I'll tell my wife, and she endures listening to me talk about, look at this neat verb agreement. And I found it in 1614. But anyway, I'm thrilled to be able to study the Book of Mormon and to see what a wonderful thing it is and to know that it was revealed words that did indeed come to Joseph Smith word for word. Thank you for your time.
I think we're passing out cards. Have we already done that? We're going to be trying to accumulate questions, which will then be gathered up here and gone through. So, are you...
You need to know if there are any seats available.
Are there any seats available, by the way? We've got...
Okay,
so if you could raise your hands and indicate that there's a space near you. So we've got people trying to find room. If there's a seat on the end, would you consider moving in, maybe, to make it a little bit easier for people to get into your place? Into that place. And if you have a card with a question on it, please hold it up and it will be gathered. And then my job at the end of a presentation is to talk for a few minutes while this process happens and then allow the speaker time to kind of go through the questions, organize them, determine if there are duplicates or anything like that. Okay. So there's... Yes. Yeah, I'll talk about that. There is one person that I failed to acknowledge, Bryce Heyman, who's sitting back there with the earphones. Actually, I presume not listening to music, is manning the camera and so on. These lectures are being recorded. They'll eventually be posted in video form on the interpreter website, and they will be published. We're still working out the, or haven't begun really to work out the details on that, but they will be published, and I'm presuming relatively quickly. And we'll let people know that as it happens. Okay, the questions are still being gathered up. Let me just make my little summation comment, and I think by then, well, we're already getting some questions. One of the most powerful secular evidences for the Book of Mormon, and therefore for the religious claims of Joseph Smith and the Restoration more generally, is, in my opinion, the absence of any comprehensive, unbelieving counter-explanation for the known facts about the book. The linguistic features alluded to here by Dr. Carmack represent, to my mind, an entirely new class of hard-to-explain facts. They make the task of the aspiring critic even harder than it already was. The existence of early modern English syntax in the Book of Mormon is, in my judgment, exceedingly difficult to account for by plausible naturalistic means. Dr. Carmack's discovery challenges believers because it's unexpected and somewhat strange. For secularizing unbelievers, though, at least if they're willing to honestly engage the data, it poses, in my view, something of an existential challenge. There seems no reasonable way, no plausible means for a semi-literate farm boy on the early 19th century American frontier to have developed a facility with early modern English syntax. Are we in a position now where we can start?
Yeah. Okay, why would the Lord use early English instead of other versions of English to communicate meaning? Well, you know, we speculate about that, but it's difficult to know. If you think about the text, it has the dominant English Bible of the period was the King James Bible, which had a lot of Tyndale's language in it. So when did Tyndale write? In the 1520s, 1530s, and he died. The language of the Book of Mormon, having a lot of 1500s language, is set out, though, still in a plain way, and it harmonizes with the Bible, but it is distinct from the Bible in certain ways, although it lines up with the Bible in certain ways. I've highlighted a lot of the differences for obvious reasons to make a point, and there are certain things where it lines up. But I would say it does work well with the King James Bible language within the text. Okay, what passages with bad grammar remain unattested? How many are there? There are a handful. For instance, Royal has on the handout whist. You could say that's bad grammar. The fact that whist is used in the Bible, and we know it from Luke, I believe, or elsewhere where it means past tense new. Wist ye not that I must be about my Father's business. But in the Book of Mormon, it's used as an infinitive. But whist, as the handout points out, it's more understandable to us, actually, than wit, than the grammatical usage. So occasionally, you see that. I don't have the numbers on the bad grammar that remain unattested. But let's see, what else might be bad grammar? What? You have five? Okay. Royal will talk about that. Yeah. Okay. Were specifics? Okay. Any specific? I'll let Royal talk about spellings dictated and early modern English. Something about spellings. Okay. What percentage of English may not be found in the OED? And so we could see a future word like knees appear. I don't know about knees. I think that's considered to be one of the non-English words in there. But yeah, there are things as I go through where I see, like, for instance, take molten, how it's used as a verb stem. I don't think they treat that properly in the OED yet. And there are things that the OED is missing and that they will be updating, of course, now that we have digital databases. So we'll have a better idea of that in the future. Okay, are there any other examples of an 18th century work with early modern English syntax? Okay, so Book of Mormon is actually an early 19th century work. From what I can see, is one of a kind during that time domain. I mean, when you take you have to go back to Caxton to get the causative and command syntax of the Book of Mormon patterned like it is. And again, I'm not sure that was even normal for Caxton. That may have been him translating out of Latin and French and then being influenced. So in some ways, the plain syntax of the Book of Mormon is truly a translation syntax. Okay, why would the Lord reveal the Book of Mormon in early modern English? Any ideas? Well, Think about, I've addressed this a bit, but think about how Nephi valued plainness and so did the Lord. So the Book of Mormon language, we can find the syntax, but it's plain in most cases. Not all the time, but in most cases. So the Lord, with his supreme intelligence, could use syntax that was older, but that would still be plain to us. So all the causative command syntax is very plain syntax. It just patterns very differently from what you see in the textual record. For instance, you know, the instances of certain kinds of syntax in the Book of Mormon, you only see a few of those in the textual record. But you see, if you count up the Book of Mormon, you'll see the Book of Mormon numbers are, you know, quite a, you know, below 50%, but still a significant portion of the syntax that you see. Why that is, we can only speculate. I don't know yet. That maybe we'll find out much later. Is the Book of Mormon 100% 16th century English? No. Is there usage peculiar to the 19th century? Well, as I pointed out, when it uses has come, have become, even have became, well, but have become, that's when it's like the 19th century. Because even in the 18th century, they were still using is become, were become, is come quite a bit. And you don't see that those levels. You do see some of it in the Book of Mormon, but not a lot. Now, the Book of Mormon also, as I pointed out, look, it supposeth me, you could argue that that is late Middle English, right? Cast in a way that we can understand it. Gower, in his poem, used supposed to mean expect and suspect, and it may mean that in the Book of Mormon, in some of those passages. But the Book of Mormon has a range of usage that goes from Chaucer all the way to the 19th century. I think it's mainly concentrated in the 1500s, 1600s, but it spans quite a bit of time for all that. So the way the Book of Mormon does had wrote, had spake, it has had spake 12 times. And you see that in the 1600s. You don't see that in the 1500s very much. So, and then certain things you only see in the early 1500s or late 1400s. So it's hard to pin the book down. It really ranges quite a bit. Okay. Here's a good question, and I really don't have a great answer for it, but it is important, I think. I've shown you strange constructions in the Book of Mormon and shown you the same ones in the early modern English textual record. They seem strange to us. For certain writers and speakers, they were not. But still, some of the stuff I've shown you is rare in the Book of Mormon and it's rare in the textual record. So the question is, yes, these things are rare in a large corpus, and so they can be viewed as marginal constructions in early modern English. So in other words, if you have a large enough corpus, can't you find a lot of these items in there? And so it's just a matter of getting a large enough corpus, then you can find a lot of things. Well, in part, yeah, there is some validity to that. But in part, every time you see one of these, that means the writer, if you can see more than one of them, I would say that's not going to be an anomaly that you can dismiss. I don't think I'm properly prepared to do that. That is a good question. And I'll let Royal tackle that if you'd like to later. Okay. Anything else?
No.
Okay. Thank you.